The biggest reason is that we weren't meant to raise children the way that we're raising children. We were meant to raise children in huge villages where if you start to feel even a tiny bit overwhelmed, you pass the child off to somebody else.
In this podcast episode, I'm lucky enough to be joined by Jen Lemanlin, who's the host and founder of the wildly successful podcast, Your Parenting Mojo. Jen holds a master's in the psychology of child development, and her podcast has been downloaded well over 3 million times. Amongst other things, Jen is going to give us some great advice about what you can do if you're feeling utterly overwhelmed as a parent. Brilliant.
Dad Mind Matters, helping men to safely navigate family life without losing their minds. Lived experience podcasts about mental health, parenting and marriage.
I've been checking out your podcast all day and kind of wish I'd found you 10 years ago. I think we would have saved numerous meltdowns, both my children and myself.
It's possible.
I'm sure this is a question you get asked a lot, but how do you stop feeling overwhelmed as a parent? As a dad of three, I've always been very open that I struggle with my mental health. And sometimes I just feel overwhelmed, whether it's the school run in the morning or whether it's trying to get a child to put his shoes on the right feet. Or what advice would you give to a parent who's overwhelmed?
Yeah. It's such a big question, right? And so many different reasons for it. And frankly, the biggest reason is that we weren't meant to raise children the way that we're raising children. We were meant to raise children in huge villages where if you start to feel even a tiny bit overwhelmed, you pass the child off to somebody else and they take care of it for a while. And then you take care of their kid for a while. And so when we're like one parent or two parents trying to raise one, two, three, four, multiple children, it's no wonder that it seems like there isn't enough of us to go around, right? That's ultimately the root of all of the overwhelm, is that we weren't supposed to be in these nuclear family units in these individual boxes, driving our other little boxes to other boxes and doing it all ourselves, right? That's the big reason.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think you're right. If we were still living in tribes of 150, you could pass to. And also both me and my wife, we're not from, we live in Brighton on the South Coast. We're not from Brighton. We came for university and stayed here. And I think nothing's more highlighted the need for family and grandparents than when you become a parent.
Yes, I agree with that. And also, I work with so many parents who tell me, I just feel so lonely, right? I don't have any support. I don't live near family. There's nobody I can ask. And it's like, okay, but if we're all feeling overwhelmed, there are other people out there who want help as well and who want to do this work together, right? And be in community. And I'm thinking of a parent that I worked with who was in an apartment complex and admitted to being the kind of parent who would hide behind the car when there were other neighbors around so that they wouldn't have to say hello.
I wonder why
we don't have any community, right?
That can resonate. It's taken all my energy to wrestle our five-year-old into the car, the nine-year-old's cross on me for something, and the 11-year-old is upset about something else. Quite often, you feel so emotionally beaten up by the time you actually get to your kids to school, is that you just want to put your head down. But you're right. And actually, if you're brave and you lift your head up and just make the effort to say good morning to people, you always feel better.
And not just feel better, but start to develop the relationships where you can actually ask each other for help, right? Because that's ultimately where we want to be going, to reduce our load, is to not just say hello and get a moment of connection, but be able to say, hey, rather than, you know, run down to the store to get mayonnaise, can I pour some mayonnaise? I've got to go and pick up kid number one. Can you watch kid number two for me for half an hour? Right. That's where we want to be heading, and even deeper than that as well.
So really what we want to do is we want to go back 300 years.
Maybe. But I would say that in the absence of that, that doesn't mean that we have no other tools, right? And so that's a big focus of my work, is there's a reason why your kid is resisting getting in the car seat and getting their shoes on and brushing their teeth and doing all the other things that they're resisting. And a big part of my work focuses on finding out why our kid is resisting us, because it's a question that the vast majority of parents I work with have never considered before. And it's just, I know I want to get my kid to do these things, but I don't know how to make it happen. And when we start to think about why they're resisting, then we find strategies to meet both of our needs.
That's a good point of it, actually, because I think as opposed to just going, I've just got to get you in the car and get you to school. Mm-hmm. If you're a five-year-old who's frustrated, mm-hmm. as difficult as it is, I need to tackle that. If they're upset about something or my five-year-old has got a real thing about socks. And I mean, unless the socks are on perfectly, and that resonates a lot with me because I got diagnosed having OCD in 2010. I've definitely got some stuff that when things don't feel right. And maybe that's why it's so frustrating, because me seeing these things in him worries me that maybe this is my fault or something I have done or passed on. But yeah, I think maybe taking the time to actually ask the questions, doing the hard miles and actually saying, what's actually the matter? It's the hardest thing I've ever tried to do, be a parent. And I think what you've said about making connections with people at school, that's huge. My wife's a teacher, and I tend to do, because I work at home, I tend to do the majority of the childcare. And there've been a number of her friends who have really rescued me when I've literally been at the school gates and I've forgotten a packed lunch, had to get them, and they've taken them in. And at that point, that is invaluable support that you mm-hmm. would. And it's something that I'd happily do. I'm going to be late. Can you pick them up? Yeah, absolutely. Of course I can.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah. And I just want to pick up again on the point about asking your kid why they're frustrated. And yes, absolutely. So important. And some kids are not going to know why. And some kids are not going to be able to tell you why. Right. And so what do we do then? I think that's really important too. And I'm actually autistic. I learned a couple of years ago through doing a podcast episode. I didn't know until that point. And I actually found it out because I was interviewing a researcher who happened to be autistic. And I was like, I should do the test and just see what the test is like. And then I'm like, oh, this explains so much. And one really important sort of trait that autistics have, it tends to be pattern recognition. And so I spend a lot of time trying to help parents in a way be a bit more autistic and find patterns where it might seem like there aren't any patterns, right? So if your child is resisting getting in the car seat only on days when you're going to daycare or preschool or school, maybe it's not about the car seat. Maybe there's something happening at daycare, school, preschool, and they're having a hard time with a teacher or another kid or something, right? And they're resisting getting in the car seat because they know that the longer they do that prolongs the time that they're not in that place. And secondly, they may be worrying about the impending separation, that they're going to be apart from you for the whole day. And they're resisting because every moment that they resist is another moment they get to spend with you. And they'd prefer if you weren't screaming at them to get in the car seat, but they'll take it over a smooth drop off and, okay, see you later.
It's a really good point, and I've never really thought about that, because quite often you just think you're just being difficult and you're making mm-hmm. my life harder. But actually, you're right. Maybe if they're worried about you, maybe they don't want to leave you.
Yeah, absolutely. And conversely, if they resist getting in the car seat, even when you're on the way to the park where they really want to go, maybe it's something about the car seat that's uncomfortable.
Maybe.
Right. And then we're looking at an entirely different set of strategies than we would be looking at if it was the separation or the trouble at school issue.
What it says to me is that, like anything, the idea of doing the work is overwhelming, but don't actually do the work and find out the answers, then all of a sudden you might think, oh, wow, I've done some work, which means that school drop-offs will be infinitely easier from now on. It's the idea of doing the work. No one wants to do the work, whether it's, you know, keeping fit. It's worth doing, because the number of times I've dropped off of school, if it hasn't been a nice start today, you just feel awful and you hold that with you. And the first thing I always do at the end of the day is you want to make friends. It's never nice falling out with your child, especially even as adults. You think, I should be dealing with this better than I am.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt there and a lot of shame as well. And that's really hard to live with. And I work with a lot of parents who tell me they go to bed at night and they think, okay, I'm going to do better tomorrow. I'm going to do better tomorrow. And they already know they're not, right? Because they don't have any tools to do it differently. And then they just get like overwhelmed with the guilt and the shame of, I'm not doing it differently. And at some point it might be too late to turn the ship. They just worry about that and get consumed by it. So when you talk about doing the work, I would say you're doing the work either way. You're doing the work to wrestle your kid in the car seat. You're doing the work to then carry that around with you all day. And at the end of the day, when you wish that things were different, you're already doing the work.
I really hope you got something from this podcast. And if you're going through or have gone through a mental health issue and you found a way to make your life slightly easier and you want to share that story, please contact me. And I know it's a massive ask because no one's got any spare time. but I'm really trying to get this podcast out there. So if you have 2 minutes to leave me a review on Apple Podcast or Spotify, that would be hugely appreciated. I hope wherever you are in the world, you're okay. Take care of yourself. My book, First Time Dad, A 42-Week Guide to Pregnancy, is available in Kindle and paperback form on Amazon and an audiobook form on Audible. To sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, www.dadmindmatters.com.